It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Quiet, please, ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
Exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This could have been avoided if we followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer?
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Be sure and keep that volume up.
On FM News 101.
It's going to be one of the highest rated shows ever.
KXL.
We are joined together today in sadness, shock, and grief. Last night, a gunman opened fire on a large crowd at a country music concert in Las Vegas, Nevada. He brutally murdered more than 50 people and wounded hundreds more. It was an act of pure evil.
President Donald Trump earlier today reacting to last night's murders. This was not a mass shooting. This was a murder. A murder of now 59 people, and that number may change today. More than 500 either wounded or injured or both. And welcome to the Lars Larson Show. You know that we'll be talking about this today because when an act like this happens in this country, a number of things happen. First of all, I'm glad to see that the man who carried out these murders, Stephen Paddock, is dead. He took his own life before the police even broke into his 32nd floor hotel room at the Mandalay Bay. This man murdered so many people, and we have very little indication of why he did it. I know everybody's asking the why question, and reporters should be as well. Earlier today, there was a claim of credit by the Islamic State, which shows what opportunistic people the Islamic State can be. The FBI now says there is no indication whatsoever of any tie to Islamic terrorism. And if we find out differently today, I'll be glad to tell you about that. Anyway, welcome to Monday. And welcome to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network. Our prayers and our thoughts go out to all of the American families who have been shattered or affected by this mass murder in Las Vegas. We have a number of guests who will be on today to talk about this, including not long from now, one of my colleagues who I've known for 20 years, Heidi Harris, who is a talk show host from Las Vegas. We'll talk to her about how her town is reacting to that. You'll hear some of the words of the president and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and you'll hear about Democrats like Congressman Earl Blumenauer from the Northwest, a Democrat who immediately came out and called for more gun laws, and Hillary Clinton, who's done the same. Let me tell you something. I thought that Sarah Huckabee Sanders, as the spokeswoman for President Donald Trump, had the right response in saying today is not the day to talk about it. Apparently, the today is not the day to talk about it memo never got to Hillary, never got to Earl Blumenauer, and I'm sure didn't get to Blumenauer's other Democrat colleagues on the Northwest congressional delegations. But since it's already been raised, let me tell you this. There is something very simple that you should think about. You don't have to be a legal expert. You don't have to be an elected official, a member of Congress to understand this. People who break laws are not stopped by one more law. And all those reporters who sat in the room today and bugged Sarah Huckabee Sanders for 10 minutes as the representative of President Trump and said, we want to comment on gun control. Here's the thing you have to understand. People who break laws like Stephen Paddock are not going to be stopped by one more law. One more law, one more statute, one more piece of writing in a law book is not going to stop them. Now, we will find out a lot more about what happened in Las Vegas and about where he got the guns. And yes, it does appear that he had full automatic weapons. Okay, at least one of them. Because the fire that you can hear is unmistakably that. Whether it was the result of some of the devices you can buy aftermarket to take a semi-automatic rifle and cause it to appear to fire in full automatic mode. I've had a number of people saying, well, can you buy a machine gun? The technical answer is, yes, you can. And it's exceedingly hard. Because to be able to buy a machine gun, you can't own one at all in Washington State. It is illegal for civilians to even possess a machine gun. It's actually, I've interviewed a man who was sitting in federal prison. He was a gunsmith, and they happened to go into his shop. This is 25 to 30 years ago, and they found a piece of metal that appeared to come from a machine gun. and they sent him to federal prison for 5 years because in Washington state, you can't even possess them. In Oregon, you can own a full automatic machine gun, but the big but is it's going to cost you north of $10,000. It may even cost you $20,000. It has to be a pre-1986 manufactured one, because the laws changed in 86. You'll have to be registered with the federal government, with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And I've talked to people who own firearms that are registered with the ATF. They have the right to walk in to your home or wherever you store them anytime they want and demand to see the weapon, demand to see the paperwork. And if you're out of order in any way, shape, or form, you've got big problems. So, yes, you can own a machine gun. They are very hard to put your hands on. They are exceedingly expensive. And I have a feeling that this was something that was probably purchased illegally. So there's already a law against it, Congressman Blumenauer and Hillary Clinton. You folks don't have something better to do with your time than talk about how one more piece of statute on the law books would have stopped a killer. You're foolish and you're mistaken and you're wasting a lot of time. We'll get to all of that in your phone calls and emails. This is the best conversation in talk journalism. It happens right here every weekday on the Radio Northwest Network. You can reach out to me at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense. Presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold, hard facts from Lars.
We should all be saying a prayer today for the families devastated by last night's mass murder in Las Vegas. Reports today say there may be a tie to Muslim terrorism, but those have been debunked by the FBI. They also said that Stephen Paddock was a convert to Islam. Apparently no truth to that either. One thing does seem certain. Political groups and politicians in this country will demand more rules. We don't need that. Paddock had no criminal record, according to the Las Vegas sheriff. He didn't have a mental health record. He broke plenty of laws already on the books, laws against murder and automatic weapons, and the list goes on. Laws don't stop criminals. Laws only infringe on the rights of the law-abiding. And if the election had gone a different way last November, Hillary Clinton would not have hesitated to push a raft of new gun laws. It didn't happen under Obama, and it's not likely to happen now.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Arm Yourself Gun Store in Hillsboro. Proudly veteran-owned and open 7 days a week. ArmYourselfStore.com.
The Daily Grill today goes to nitwits like Hillary Clinton and Earl Blumenauer, who see constitutional rights as the problem and who think that more laws would have stopped a law-breaking individual like Stephen Paddock. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Jim Botts writes in from Tacoma. Lars, once again, the media is going crazy about a mass shooting. Why can't they get their terminology correct? It is mass murder. If a crazy drives into a crowd of people, do they call it mass driving? No, they call it mass murder. The terminology is being used to make guns the issue, and it's shameful. A mass shooting is what I do at the gun range safely, in control, and legally. Signed, Jim Botts in Tacoma. We'll be back in just a moment with one of my colleagues from Las Vegas, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
One man, 29-year-old Sonny Melton, had traveled from Tennessee to Las Vegas for the concert with his wife, Heather. When the bullets began raining down from above, Sonny shielded her from danger, selflessly giving up his life to save hers. They'd been married for just over a year. Others risked their own lives to save people that they had never met. Mike McGarry of Philadelphia laid on top of students at the concert to protect them from the gunfire. They're 20, I'm 53, he said, and I've lived a good life. Lindsay Paget and her fiancé, Mike J., fled for cover during the attack and immediately returned to the scene with their pickup truck to help transport the wounded to nearby hospitals. Gail Davis, who was attending the concert with her husband, said she owes her life to a brave police officer who instinctively served as a human shield, protecting her from harm. Sadly, multiple police officers, both on duty and off duty, were among those killed or injured. But what these people did for each other says far more about who we are as Americans than the cowardly acts of a killer ever could.
That's Sarah Huckabee Sanders speaking for President Trump this morning from the White House briefing room. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. And on the phone with me is my colleague in talk radio, Heidi Harris, who makes her home in Las Vegas. Heidi, it's good to have you on the program, although these are difficult, such difficult circumstances to talk about. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to talk to you. It's just heartbreaking. I mean, this, you know what, Mark, you've been to Vegas many times. You know the town very well.
Yep.
And it's surprising that something like this hasn't happened before. And I would give credit to the amazing security they have in every one of these casinos and the incredible police force we have, first responders, fire department. These guys are amazing. And when you think about the fact that they've got to keep upwards of 40 million people a year safe in this town, it's a tall order, and they do a fantastic job every day. And I do want to mention that because it's one of those things where this is one crazy guy who got through. And, you know, there are people who are talking about gun control. I mean, that's a boring topic for another time. But there are people who are asking the question, well, why don't we have metal detectors at all these casinos? And you know this town. Most of these casinos have 3-4 entrances. Realistically, could you imagine if everyone had to line up to a metal detector every time they went in and out of a casino in this town? It would be nuts.
Heidi, I can't even imagine it if you only restricted it to people staying in the hotel, since Paddock was on the 32nd floor. If you said, well, just apply it to people checking in, as you say, 40 million people in a year. Can you imagine going to Las Vegas and having TSA-level security for all luggage going to rooms? And then I pointed out to people, my wife, you know my wife, she shops, and you come back to your room in the middle of the day, and you have a bunch of bags, and you're going to go upstairs. Are you going to search everyone's bag every time they go back to their room or search their person? They, as you say, they have very good security. They usually have a person sitting right there. You have to show a hotel key to get above the casino floor. But that level of security, I think it would shut down Las Vegas.
I think it would. And, you know, there's profiling in every occupation. There's profiling certainly when it comes to Homeland Security and that kind of thing. And, you know, there are big people, I'm sure, who've plotted this kind of thing before. But who's looking for the 64-year-old white guy? Not that most mass shootings aren't done by white guys, because they are. But this is just not something that you're expecting to see in Las Vegas. And we're hearing that he could have had more than 10 guns. I've heard upwards of 18 to 20 guns. I've also heard that when the hotel staff went in and cleaned the room, they didn't notice it. And apparently he had built various perches that he was shooting from. So I don't know how it is that the staff didn't see it. I'm not blaming the staff. Believe me, he could have hidden it. But it's just the guy clearly plotted this for a long period of time. And that's what's so scary, is where's the next one going to come from?
Well, and then, as you say, he checked in last Thursday night, and he had been in the hotel all the way till Sunday night. And then he even brought with him some kind of sledge or hammer that he used to break out the windows so that he could shoot down on this crowd of people. And what we still have no inkling of is what was motivated. What pushed this guy over the edge? His brother in Florida was expressing shock and amazement. He said he knew the guy, but he didn't know him as a, you know, as he said, a gun nut. And by that, I mean somebody who's a gun enthusiast. His brother just said this came out of the blue, like an asteroid landing.
Yeah, can you even imagine him? The family just seemed shocked. He seemed like a very normal guy by all accounts, with nothing but, I guess, a citation in the past. So he hadn't been in trouble with the law. We don't know of any reason he'd be disgruntled. He had plenty of money. Apparently, he was playing $100 a hand blackjack, so he clearly had means. It just is crazy. It's one thing for somebody to lose their mind and go shoot a bunch of people up at work or something like that because they get fired. That kind of thing happens, we know. But this was something that was planned for a long period of time, and yet there's no indication as to why he did it. And all of us in talk radio, when something like this happens, and everybody in general, we're all looking for the solution. We're looking for the answer. How do we stop this from happening the next time? We don't see the lesson here.
No, in fact, I've suggested to people that more laws do not stop people who break laws. And this man, we haven't even counted up the number of laws that he broke. Well, while, you know, before he even got to the hotel, you know, we don't know if he had a fully automatic weapon. It sounds from the video and the audio as though it was firing on full auto, although we do know there are devices you can use to make an AR-15 semi-automatic mimic that. But how do you stop somebody from doing something like that? And the number of guns, which everyone is focusing on, I I've told people that, you know, one guy with one rifle and a bag full of magazines is probably more frightening to me if he's intending to use them in a way to murder people than a guy with 18 rifles, because I don't even know why you would do that. But I certainly don't know why he would murder people. And until we figure out the why, you know, how do you get to the answer of how do you stop the next one?
Yeah, you can't. And everybody's looking at this and they're saying, what did we miss? And once again, not laying this at the feet of security. This guy had plotted this. But people, you've been there. You know, people bring in, they wheel in coolers full of beer into their rooms. And they're bringing all these luggages. And as you mentioned, there's a lot of people who shop, like your wife, those kind of people who bring packages back. And, plus there's some stuff in people's luggage in Vegas I don't want to know about. Well, right? That's a whole other issue.
That's the truth, too.
But that brings up another aspect. You know, Vegas is one of those towns where, you know, what happens here stays here. There's a lot of privacy that people expect and is extended. When I was a little kid growing up here, if you tried to take a photograph of anything in a casino, they would take your camera away and take your film out. That's how crazy they were about protecting people who were here on a wink-wink business trip. And obviously with cell phone cameras and all that kind of stuff, it's a different world. But if you leave something in your hotel room, I don't care how valuable it is, they're not going to call you and say, you know, Mr. Larson, you left your such and such in the room. They'll put it in lost and found. If you come back for it, you can, but they're not going to call you up because they're still trying to respect your privacy. So when you talk about trying to search somebody's luggage and all that kind of stuff, I cannot see that going at all.
No, I can't see it, nor could I see it stopping it because, you know, people who've handled AR-15s, I've got a couple of them, you could conceal that under a coat, which again goes back to the question of, are you going to not just search everybody's luggage, but every time they leave the casino floor and go back to their hotel room, you're going to search them each and every time they go back and forth? That doesn't seem very realistic at all.
No, well, maybe he hid the weapons in the comforter, because, you know, casinos they never wash those comforters. Maybe that's where they're off.
That could be.
All kidding aside. No, but this is a tragic situation. I do want to mention a couple of things. Right now, as we speak, I'm stuck in traffic. You know the town. I'm stuck on West Charleston trying to get to the blood bank. You can't even get to the blood bank. The lines are down the street. Everybody's jumping in because Vegas is a great town. I know we take a bad rap for a lot of things, but this is a fantastic town. Our county commissioner, Steve Sisolak, started a GoFundMe page for the victims. It's now over $870,000. Pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Heidi, I was just looking at something. Hold that up again. It says Tom Petty reportedly rushed to hospital. Oh, okay. This is about Vegas or is no. Okay. I'll get to that just a bit later. Heidi, I really appreciate you coming on with us on a busy day like today. And thank God for the first responders, for the police, even the off-duty police who were in the audience last night, who were helping and as Sarah Huckabee Sanders said, in some cases, literally shielding people with their bodies as this was going on. We appreciate your time, Heidi.
Thank you, Lars. Always great to talk to you. Sorry I had to be on a day like this.
No kidding. Longtime talk show host from Vegas, Heidi Harris, with us. We'll get back to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you. And we will be talking a lot about the events overnight, the mass murder that happened in Las Vegas. But I have a great opportunity, and I've talked to him before, but he is a wonderful author, Mark Barton, who is the national correspondent for The Atlantic and contributing editor at Vanity Fair, and the best-selling author, of course, of Black Hawk Down and Killing Pablo, and more recently, Way 1968. Mark, it's good to meet you in person for the first time.
Likewise, Lars. Thanks.
Thank you very much for taking the time. I know that you're going to be doing a reading at, I believe, Powell's Books tonight, right?
Tonight, right.
Okay, well, people can take advantage of that. It's a great bookstore.
I'll be there with Ken Nolan, who was the screenwriter for Black Hawk Down.
Yeah, and in fact, I know people love the movie, but I think the books make the movie pale by comparison, if you want my personal...
Well, now, thank you.
As an author, do you share that opinion?
Well, I think books are better at conveying large amounts of information and subtlety and... than movies, but movies have their own advantages as well.
I mean, 30 seconds of excitement about a soldier whose femoral artery has been clipped in your books, the descriptions are just, they're better than watching it on video.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm biased. I like prose. That's why I'm a writer. I'm not a filmmaker.
Would you mind telling my audience about Way 1968?
Not at all. It's a story of what was the largest, I think, and bloodiest battle fought in Vietnam during the Tet Offensive, or at the outset of the Tet Offensive. The North Vietnamese and Viet Cong seized the third largest city in South Vietnam and held it for a month. And it took the Marines and Army and Navy and Air Force practically a month of bitter house-to-house, block-to-block fighting to clear that city and take it back. So it's a battle that was a fascinating and important story in its own right, but also, I think, played a kind of pivotal role in the story of Vietnam.
By the way, for those of you who may be looking up Mark's book online, I loved showing it to some of my friends here at the radio studios who are under 40, and they said, Hugh? That's you, E? I said, it's Way. I said, those of us who are from, I mean, I was a teenager at the time. I was in high school, but, you know, you recognize that and said that was a significant event in the Vietnam War, but today it's a tough memory, and yet, when you hear people say, well, we are not experts at urban warfare, you know, in regards to Iraq or other places in the Middle East, this was, in fact, one of our first experiences, the military's first experiences with dealing with urban warfare, wasn't it?
Well, it really wasn't. I mean, it had been a long time. I mean, in World War II, American troops fought in big cities in Europe all the way across the continent.
That's true.
And in Korea, we fought two major battles in Seoul, which is a very big city. But when the Battle of Hue happened, it had been, 20, 30 years since the Marines and the Army had fought in an urban environment. And there were none of the men who fought there that day had any prior experience with it. In fact, Ernie Cheatham, who was the battalion commander, hunted up old Marine Corps manuals in order to study up the night before he went into Hue on how to fight in a city.
Because you didn't have that institutional memory of sergeants and lieutenants and captains
exactly.
who'd been around during the Korean conflict.
You know, life and death knowledge. I mean, simple things like you don't attack a building by running across the street and trying to go through the door. You blow a hole in the wall and go through the hole because they've got the doors strong pointed. Simple, you know, experience would have. I mean, these guys in Hue learned really fast, but you lose people in that learning curve. So I think, you know, one of my favorite characters in the book is Ernie Cheatham, who knew enough to know that he didn't know, and he sought out books to find out how best to approach it, and he saved, I think, a lot of lives.
So like Don Rumsfeld said, that was one of those known unknowns. He knew what he didn't know.
Exactly.
So what else did you find out about that time in Vietnam and about how men reacted to those situations?
Well, it's nothing short of astonishing how these young Marines who were just being mowed down, most of whom, if you talk to them, would tell you that they didn't believe they would get out alive. They nevertheless kept getting up every morning and running across the street into enemy fire and kept going and going and going. So just the dedication and the heroism there is pretty hard not to admire. And I was, frankly, on the other hand, shocked by the poor leadership at the highest levels of the American military in Vietnam. I did not know that going in. I'm not a military expert. But when you look closely at the decisions that were being made to send small American units up against vastly superior enemy forces, strictly on the basis of refusing to believe their own field commanders about what they were facing, there were a lot of young Americans who were killed because commanders just were reluctant to believe that the enemy could mount an attack of this size.
And Mark, you're talking about commanders far up the chain in country or commanders far up the chain back at the Pentagon?
In country. Foster LaHue, who was Task Force X-Ray Commander, was in Phu Bai, which is 10 miles south of Hue. Of course, William Westmoreland was in Saigon, which is, you know, a couple hour flight away. But they were both in country. And in between Foster LaHue, who was a two-star general, and William Westmoreland, there are, you know, dozens of ranking officers who are in that chain. And if you study the Battle of Hue, you realize that the men who were on the ground, who were facing the enemy, were radioing back exactly what the situation was. And they were disbelieved and continually ordered to launch attacks against superior forces until well into the fight. So it was shocking to me.
And why were they disbelieved? Now, I want you to debunk something, first of all. Mm-hmm. There's a popular conception today. Well, Vietnam was all fought by draftees. But there were an awful lot of people who went to Vietnam who had signed up for military duty. These weren't reluctant warriors. These were people who said, this is what my country wants me to do, and they signed up. Sure. So were they disbelieved because the folks up the chain said, now, these guys don't know what they're talking about, or they just don't want to be there, or they don't want to do the job? Or what was the reason that they were not believed by the folks up the chain?
Well, there are a number of reasons. Looking at it from the top down, I think it's not at all unusual, if you've ever worked in a large organization, for people in charge to be so convinced of the rightness of their theory and of their way of running things that they are fairly impervious to reason and evidence. And that's, I think, a human trait, very often present with someone who has a lot of responsibility. In the military, if you have that attitude, you can get people killed. And that's the big difference. So I think General Westmoreland, for example, had a very elaborate theory. He could dazzle you with a PowerPoint of exactly what was going on in Vietnam. And one of the points that he would make is that the enemy has been so reduced that they're not capable of launching any major attacks, is particularly in urban areas. So when one happened, his reaction was, these must be young soldiers who are panicking, who've never faced combat before. You know, they're on the radio, you know, reluctant to, you know, charge the enemy. And, you know, we just need to get tough on them and tell them they should get in there and do it. So it was a combination of disbelieving the youth and inexperience, because none of these guys had fought a battle like this before, and I think arrogance and kind of a blindness to reality.
So he had a belief that the enemy wasn't as dangerous as they could have been or might have been under different circumstances, and that his own people were less capable.
Yeah, I think that General Westmoreland had come back to the United States in November of 1967, just 2 months before the Tet Offensive, and had given a speech at the National Press Club where he outlined phase by phase how well the war was going and said the only places where the enemy is capable of mounting attacks are little ambushes on the perimeter of the country in the mountains and out in the rice paddies. The cities are all secure, and we're moving into phase four, and we're going to begin withdrawing American troops next year. And so the message was, this war is really under control. And when reality contradicted him, he was loath to entertain the possibility that he was that wrong.
I mean, at the time he gave that speech, was he backed up by actual facts and stats on the ground, or was it just wishful thinking?
Oh, he had plenty of stats. I mean, he was a Robert McNamara, Ford Motor Company management guru. He was a new part of the new era of leadership in the Army, where everything was quantified and there was data about everything, the number of enemy killed versus the number of American soldiers killed, the famous body counts.
Mm-hmm. Which were flawed for what reason?
Well,
explain that.
Well, they were largely flawed because in Vietnam, that became the avenue for advancement. So if you were a young lieutenant and you were looking to get promoted, you didn't report that you were just out patrolling for 2 days and you didn't see any enemy, or you got in a firefight and four of your guys got killed and you didn't kill any enemy. I mean, you came back, well, if I lost somebody, they damn sure lost 10. And those numbers were inflated up the chain because the lieutenant in the field's captain, you know, wants to be reporting that he's making a big difference where he is. So there was a built-in incentive to exaggerate these numbers. And, of course, General Westmoreland is not the last general to welcome good news, and he wasn't looking that gift horse in the mouth. But he had lots of other stats. He had stats about, you know, the number of enemy who were defecting, flow of ammunition and supplies down the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And again, in every one of these instances, there was incentive all the way up the chain to make the story look better and better and better for the Americans. So I think Westmoreland believed his own data. And so much so that when events contradicted his belief, he was reluctant to change his mind.
The book is called Way 1968. Its author is Mark Bowden. Mark, thank you very much for coming by. It's so good to finally get a chance to meet you in person.
My pleasure, Lars. Thank you.
We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. A little bit of Tom Petty, because we have reports today that he was rushed to the hospital last night after he was found unconscious, not breathing, and in full cardiac arrest. We will get you details on his situation as we can. There's also an unconfirmed, and I emphasize unconfirmed, report of an active shooter on the USC campus. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We'll get you details on that as they're available. I'm glad to get your phone calls and emails. We've been talking today, of course, about the mass murder that happened in Las Vegas, Nevada last night. 59 people murdered by a gunman in a hotel room 32 floors above a country western concert. Jason Aldean was performing on stage when the gunfire broke out. More than 500 people wounded or injured after that incident, including, I was just noticing, I believe it's University of Nevada, Las Vegas, said their assistant coach was shot. The hockey team was shot in the coach in the chest when a gunman opened fire, killing. The current count is 59. Thankfully, the Rebels men's ice hockey team said that Nick Rabone had surgery to remove a bullet from his chest. He's breathing with help from a ventilator. He's in stable condition. The president of the United States has weighed in on this. And as usual, our friends in the Democrat Party have already started talking about passing more laws, because we all know that laws will stop law-breaking people from doing things. Right, Vince?
Hi, Lars.
Vince, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Well, thanks, Lars. Just wanted to kind of chime in about this shooting in Las Vegas and like, and the Democrats and their effort toward gun control. And, you know, it's bad enough, it's disheartening as it is, and it's just really discouraging to see these kinds of things happen. It's hard to imagine anybody could get in their mind that this is a good thing to do. I mean, it really is just pure evil. But to add insult to injury, to have to listen to the Democrats spout off about their gun control agenda when these kinds of things happen, it's just so disgusting to me, I can't believe it. And so I have this kind of argument with friends of mine, because I don't get invited to parties much anymore around here, but you know, I tell them, you know, when these things happen, the Democrats, especially the leadership, they're actually gleeful about it. They're actually a bunch of opportunistic ghouls, as far as I'm concerned, which always gets the party rolling. But I tell them, look, consider this. Back in 2011, the GAO did a study about what the impact was of the criminal illegals are American society.
Yep.
So they came up with the numbers that were at the time. There was like 56,000 incarcerated criminal illegals. They committed, they'd been arrested about eight times or more each, which was 456,000 arrests. And collectively, they committed 700,000 crimes against the American people. And some of those estimates were about 25,000 homicides have been perpetrated by these people in jail. At the time, that was in 2011.
Yep.
And what did you ever hear from the Democrats? Well, and I tell them, no, look, don't hurt yourself. The answer is nothing, because they don't have anything to say about that. They always open up. They provide social services. They provide sanctuary to these people, legal services, you name it, because this is a voting block for them. And they like to endear themselves to Latino voters, by showing them how much their criminal counterparts are also welcomed by the Democratic Party.
So now, wouldn't you think that if they could identify a group of people and say this group is responsible for a lot of violence toward American citizens, so we should stop this group, they're happy to do it to people who are proud of their Second Amendment rights. They're not happy to do it, as you point out, to a lot of the illegal aliens out there who are responsible for a whole lot more violence toward American citizens. Let's go to Chris in Salem. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars, I wanted to take the gambling component, just that kind of angle for a second. But even, you know, as I'm a liberal guy, I've been calling in for a long time, and I think that the opportunistic sort of the calls for gun control, the audience has to remember mass shootings are still incredibly rare. And we like to take a cost-benefit analysis on everything. I mean, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater when still this is something that's incredibly rare.
I agree with you. Now, do we want to stop them from happening? Yes. Is it hard to stop things that happen where there is no way to look for signs that it might happen? You have a 64-year-old man He's a comfortable resident of Mesquite, Nevada. He comes to Vegas occasionally to gamble. He's apparently got no problems. He's got no criminal record. He's got no mental health record. His own family says they were floored by this. They had no idea. And there are often family members who will say, oh, yeah, so-and-so in my family has mental problems. This guy had none of those warning signs. So how would you stop something like this from happening when you don't have any of the indicators that might lead you to be able to identify the person who might do something like this? In a situation like that, it's exceedingly hard to stop a mass murder like today or last night in Vegas.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
Should be played at high volume.
This is the Lars Larson Show. Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
When enough people make false promises, words stop meaning anything.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
We meet at a time of both immense promise and great peril.
Now. Here's Lars Larson.
Bunch of swipe left on Lars Larson. Some dignity back in the White House.
On FM News 101.
Not an avid gun guy at all. The fact that he had those kind of weapons is just... Where the hell did he get automatic weapons? He's not... He has no military background or anything like that. When you find out about him, like I said, he's just a... He's a guy who lived in a house in Mesquite and drove down and gambled in Las Vegas. He did stuff. He ate burritos.
Was the woman that they were looking for his girlfriend?
Yes. Yeah, Mary Lou. I was on the phone with the cops.
What do you know about
that? We were worried that he might have hurt her, too.
Police are actually describing her as his wife.
They might have got married, but I don't think they're married. He's just his girlfriend.
That is Eric Paddock, who is the brother of Stephen Paddock, the man who murdered 59 people last night in Las Vegas, Nevada. The brother in Florida saying that he had not actually talked to his brother in a while, but he'd actually got a text message from him not long ago to check on their mother, who lives in Florida after the hurricane. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to have you on board and glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. A couple of other of the data points related to the shooting that took the lives of 59 last night left more than 500 people both wounded and injured in Las Vegas after this shooting incident. The gunman, Paddock, is dead. And the politicians got on it right away. Hillary Clinton reporting, 10, 12 hours ago, Hillary Clinton saying we have to have more gun laws. And she talked about standing up to the NRA and a lot of the other usual nonsense. And liberal Democrat Congressman Earl Blumenauer calling for gun control. Can somebody please tell me? I can't wrap my head around some of the theories that liberals have. But if you have a man who's willing to take weapons and murder 59 people, that's breaking the law. If he's willing to use automatic weapons, and we don't know how many he had or whether or not they were full auto or they were AR-15s that were engineered to be able to fire as a full automatic weapon would fire. But from the audio, from the videos that were shot last night, it seems pretty clear that there was some at least mimicry of a full auto. How did he get those weapons? And what was it that drove him to do this? It was just absolutely unbelievable to see the reports this morning. President Donald Trump has weighed in. But if you're a liberal or you know some liberals and you can explain to me, what law is it that would stop somebody who's already willing to break the laws against murder and against shooting people and that sort of thing? What kind of law would it be that would stop something like that? This is some of what they heard last night. That is the sound of the attack that was launched against people, 22,000 or so, who were simply attending a country music festival. Last night, as the shooting began, Jason Aldean on stage performing, and all of a sudden they come under gunfire from a man who came to a hotel, last Thursday night, checked into the Mandalay Bay, brought with him firearms, ammunition, hammers to break out the windows of the hotel room on the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay and begin to murder people for no discernible reason whatsoever. Let's go to Bill in Eugene. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hi, Lars. Thanks for having me on your show. Hey, just a couple of comments. Number one, I just wonder why automatic rifles of any kind are available to the public.
They're generally not. You're aware of that, right?
Yeah. I'm not. I don't know much about it, but he's got them, so I figured he was able to get them.
Okay. People have heroin, and heroin is not legal to buy. People have methamphetamine and there are lots of things that people have that are not legal to buy. I mean, you could name dozens of items that people have, both in firearms and in other areas. It is, and what I, when somebody asked me today, can you buy a fully automatic weapon? Yes, you can. It's very complicated. It is extraordinarily expensive, and it's very limited. So I live in Washington State. If I owned an automatic weapon, I could not possess it in Washington State. And by possess, I mean I couldn't take it across the bridge at the Columbia River and have it in Washington State without breaking both state law and some federal laws. You could own a full automatic weapon in Oregon. It would have to have been one manufactured before 1986. I haven't looked up today, but in past years when I've looked them up, you might be able to buy one for $15,000 or $20,000. You would have to have it registered with the ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which is a federal agency. And they keep very, very close rein on people who own weapons that have to be registered that way.
Apparently not close enough.
Well, hold on a second. We don't know what this weapon was. We don't know if this was
a... Did you hear the sound of it?
Did you hear the sound I just played? Did you hear the sound I just played on the air? I played the sound on the air. There are ways to make semi-automatic rifles mimic a full auto. The other way would be to go out and...
I don't know what you mean by mimic. Mimic is a funny word to me. That would spit now.
Mimic is a funny word? Well, listen. What I mean is, if you buy a semi-automatic weapon, there are devices that you can buy, and if you use them, you're breaking the law, that make the semi-automatic rifle behave like. That's what mimic means, behave like a full auto.
I understand what mimic means, but I think you're clouding the issue with silly three.
How am I clouding the issue? I'm saying, for instance, you can buy lots. If you go take, for instance, last week we were talking about OxyContin. If you take an OxyContin pill, it disperses in your body over the course of about 12 hours. If you crush it, you can make it behave like a drug that will get you high. Somebody who takes a regular OxyContin pill, it will not get them high, but it will relieve their pain for 12 hours. If you crush the pill and you defeat the time release that's built into the pill, then you can get the high right now by getting. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Know. All right. I don't know about the drugs. I know what you mean. I heard you recording. That recording was an automatic rifle. There's no mimicking. There's no other word you can use. That was an automatic rifle.
And okay,
it shouldn't have been available.
Well, but understand that if he bought a full automatic rifle and the feds would know fairly quickly whether he was a registered owner of a full automatic rifle. And if he had such a thing and he wasn't law enforcement, and it wasn't registered with the federal government, he would be in violation of the law. So when people say, let's have another law so that we stop these things from happening, when somebody's willing to break the law by murdering people, more laws are not going to stop them, are they?
I suppose the other question I had is, how did he get rifles into a motel? Aren't those things, you know, did he put them in his pants?
Bill, when you checked into a hotel the last time, how big was your suitcase?
Not that big. I don't travel very heavy. But,
okay, well, I usually carry. I went hunting this weekend. I had a duffel bag with me. I usually throw all my stuff in a duffel bag. The duffel bag would have easily held an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. If I had illegally modified it to make it full auto, it would fit inside the duffel bag. I could probably fit four or five of them in there and a whole bunch of magazines. So how did he get it in the hotel? If you've ever checked, have you ever been to Las Vegas and seen people checking in?
In 83, I
have. Okay, so if you've been there recently, you would see people checking in some cases with small bags like yours, and in some cases with bags that will hold a small child.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how he got them in. He walked them in probably in his luggage. right?
How would you prevent that? Well, you could, but it would be just like going to an airport. I mean, you know, we want to do that with Las Vegas.
Well,
I guess that's what we're gonna
do. There are 40 million people who stay for a day or two in Las Vegas every year. Can you imagine running 40 million people through metal detectors, not just the first time they checked in, but every time they went to their room? You'd take anything they were carrying and you'd run it through an airport style, search. Do you think that would work?
It'd be real tough to do. So if I understand correctly, what you told me is that automatic weapons are illegal.
No, they are illegal if you own them the wrong way.
Okay, what? I don't understand. Own them the wrong way.
If you buy an automobile, do you have an automobile? Are you familiar with automobiles?
Lars,
I don't know what your level of knowledge is because you haven't been to Vegas in 30 years. If you own an automobile, can you drive it on the public roads
does going to Vegas make me a smarter person?
Bill, I don't know. Obviously not. You're very smart, but can you own an automobile without registering it with the state government?
No.
If I bought an automobile and I didn't register it with the state and put the right tags on it and I drove it down the highway, would I be breaking the law?
You would, and you'd be arrested.
Well, that's the point, is that you can own an automobile illegally. I mean, if I took an old automobile and I put it back in running order, but I didn't put a registration on it, didn't put any license plates on it, I would be driving the automobile illegally. There are people who can legally buy a full automatic machine gun, but it's extraordinarily expensive and it's extraordinarily tough to do it the legal way. So it's not technically illegal to buy an automatic, but buying one is a real chore to go through with the federal government. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Hundreds of our fellow citizens are now mourning the sudden loss of a loved one, a parent, a child, a brother or sister. We cannot fathom their pain. We cannot imagine their loss. To the families of the victims, we are praying for you. And we are here for you. And we ask God to help see you through this very dark period.
President Donald Trump speaking this morning about the shooting in Las Vegas. The current count, according to the police, although the numbers could change, is that 59 people were murdered last night when a gunman opened fire, Stephen Paddock, on the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Casino Hotel. Broke out the windows with a hammer or a sledge and then used his weapons to shoot down into the crowd. More than 500 people listed as either injured or wounded or both. And we'll get your phone calls and emails. I want to mention one thing. A CBS executive, if this tells you about the attitude of some people in this country, if this had been a conservative, well, the mainstream media would be all over it. But this is a liberal, Haley Geftman Gold, a young lady who served as senior counsel for strategic transactions at the television network CBS. She posted to Facebook today, if they wouldn't do anything when children were murdered, she's talking about Sandy Hook, I have no hope that repugs, as she put it, will ever do the right thing. I'm actually not even sympathetic because country music fans often are Republican gun toters. The words of Haley Geftman Gold, who is now looking for a new job because she's been fired from CBS as the senior counsel for strategic transactions. I have a feeling that job for a lawyer is probably a pretty nice job to have, and she doesn't have it anymore because she said stupid and evil things about her fellow Americans. Let's go to Wally. Hey, Wally, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Thank you, Lars. First-time caller. Just wanted to comment on what happened in Vegas. I moved to Oregon 3 years ago from Texas.
Yeah.
And the argument against having or the access that immediately the Democrats or everyone on this side is trying to – they're not even talking about the victims. They just want to say the access to the guns made him – or made this possible.
Yep.
And that just normalizes this man's behavior and completely illegitimizes the rest of us who are sane, who think about other people and don't do things like that. I understand. It's very intuitive to believe that, oh, we just need to remove the guns and then this won't happen anymore. That's not the case when people are planning. This guy planned this. You can't get that room on a night. You know what I mean? You have to get it. You have to plan ahead of time.
Book it ahead of time.
Know where they're going to be, all those things. So, I mean, that's the problem with this. It's not about the access to guns. It's the fact that this guy had some issues. You know, regardless, if it was very difficult for him to get semi-automatic weapons, I can guarantee you he had 10 long-range rifles in his room. This individual was someone who sourced weapons, okay? You can make it difficult for him to get it, but he's still going to find a way because he's deranged. So this is not, I mean, Hillary Clinton, all the Democrats, they're not even talking about the victims. They're immediately going to their talking point. Every time something like this happens, they have their talking point. This is my chance to take the guns away. But they don't understand that. I mean, they have to know in the history of all this, that doesn't solve anything. It just, it makes them feel good, maybe because their underlying agenda is being met and they're unarming us and making it more difficult for us to protect ourselves. But when you think about it in the grand scheme of things, people need to really like wake up and be like, well, you know what? I'm not crazy. Even though I can buy an automatic weapon, I won't go to the 32nd floor of a and just unload. I'm not going to do that.
Yep.
This man is crazy. So it's not the access. It's his mental status.
And apparently he had concealed his mental status from his own family, his brother in Florida, so well that his brother said this is like an asteroid fell on Earth. It's totally out of the blue. He had seen nothing in his brother's behavior. Now, there was a guy who murdered a person in southern Oregon over the weekend. He walked into a lodge down near Medford and murdered somebody, took their car, was out on the highway shooting at people. And thank God, a guy with a pickup truck who was being shot at ran over the guy and killed him. But that guy, at least his family said, well, we knew he had some mental issues. The man in Vegas, Stephen Paddock. Now, here's what Blumenauer came out, Congressman Earl Blumenauer, far to the left side of things in politics in the Northwest. He sent out this message just a few hours after the shooting. He said the right wing and NRA messaging the point that nothing can be done. He said, here's his plan. One, keep guns from the most dangerous users by closing the private sale loophole. Well, in many states, if not most, it has been closed. Having law enforcement follow up with each person who fails the background check. I actually agree with Blumenauer on that because you frequently have people who walk into a gun store, try to buy a gun. Turns out they have a felony record, which means the attempt to buy a gun was a crime. And, for example, the Oregon State Police does not follow up on it. So I agree with Blumenauer there. Restricting assault weapons and high-capacity magazines that are unsafe in any public place. Well, what does he mean by that? In California, there are laws that say you can't have a magazine bigger than 10. The problem is that anybody who owns guns could tell you that if Stephen Paddock had walked in there with a semi-automatic rifle with a bag full of 10-round magazines, he could have done as much damage as he did last night by doing what he did. So a lot of times, the things they're proposing to people not familiar with firearms sound perfectly reasonable. If you examine them, they wouldn't actually make a difference. Wally, thanks very much, and welcome to the Pacific Northwest. The weather is different, and some of the politics is different in this region as well. Thank you so much for the call. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get back to your phone calls and some of the naysayer calls out there as well. But I want to get a law enforcement perspective on what happened in Las Vegas last night as a man decided to murder almost 60 people and cause injuries or wounds to more than 500 when he began shooting from the 32nd floor hotel room of the Mandalay Bay Hotel in Las Vegas. Former Sheriff Bernie Giusto joins me now. Bernie, we had planned to bring you on the program to talk about all kinds of law enforcement issues, but I'm glad that you're available to give us a perspective on this because as sheriff, your department had been through active shooter situations, right?
Yeah, that's correct, Lars, and that's what's changed about the dynamic for law enforcement in these situations. As you know from Columbine, it was a wait and see for law enforcement. Now it's a head-on confrontation with these active shooters. So law enforcement finds itself in a very dangerous situation, as they did last night when they entered on the 32nd floor, having no idea what it is they're walking into, but really don't have any other option.
I mean, in that case, they say that they blew the door, but that by that time, the man had either taken his life moments before or took it as they were coming through the door. But with a threat like this, somebody shooting from a tall building where they've knocked the windows out, how does law enforcement deal with a situation like that?
Well, I tell you, it makes it very difficult. So if we take a look at what we typically like to do, these kind of events or people believe we can do, we screen 22,000 people going in, but how would that would have helped us yesterday evening? Didn't help a bit. And when they say they made a dynamic entry, what they really mean is that they located the shooter because the amount of munitions that that shooter had set off in that room, it set off the fire alarm. So that's why they knew exactly where the shooter was, and that's how they entered. After they entered there, actually, I think they fired some rounds. I believe they fired rounds as they entered, but they think he was dead already. That above the incident shooting makes it extraordinarily difficult, because even if you know where the shooter is, returning fire to that kind of a situation is impossible. So the only way to do it is take it head on.
Yeah, because, I mean, I told some people this morning, I said, even if you had known that it was, because in the dark, it might have been difficult to tell that the windows had been broken out of that particular room. But I would imagine you would have to have an equally high vantage point or something similarly high to be able to see the target well enough. And even then, you know that if you're shooting into an occupied building, you may hit somebody who's an innocent bystander.
Well, that's just the unacceptable part of just firing back at a target like that. And again, well, as soon as there's a fair amount of muzzle flash from those weapons, and they're yet to release the caliber of those weapons, but these are going to be, especially the ones he was using, at least in the AK-47 realm, and that automatic feature that it's definitely automatic fire is either somebody who possesses that weapon legally, probably illegally, because only a federal permit allows you to possess those weapons at any place in the United States. You can possess them, but the federal government, ATF, has to give you that permission to possess them, or he's purchased them illegally, and if that's the case downstream, somebody's got some big problems.
Yeah, because I mean, Bernie, I was trying to explain this to a caller who called in earlier and said, well, can you buy these things? And I said, well, yeah, you can buy them legally, but it's extraordinarily difficult. You have to find one that was manufactured before 1986. Then you have to pay the price, which is north of the ones I've seen are north of $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. Then you have to satisfy the ATF that you can do the paperwork and the background check to allow you to own one. And then the ATF tends to keep an eye on you in that they can come in anytime they want and say we'd like to see your paperwork on these weapons. I have a feeling if he purchased a full auto weapon, he purchased it illegally somewhere. And how do you stop that?
Well, I tell you, it goes back even further than that. Before ATF will even consider it, when I was both chief at Gresham Police and then sheriff of the county, you had to have a letter from that prevailing law enforcement agency to allow you to apply to ATF for their approval. So it starts way back in terms of can you get these weapons. And I was one of the few law enforcement executives that would sign that, but I always sent a letter with it that says, I don't know if I agree with it or not, your purchase, but I tell you now, I don't have the right in my own opinion, the law allows it, so you can purchase it. From there, it gets very difficult. In fact, I signed it for FBI agents before they could even apply.
Is that right? So you had to sign those letters for FBI agents who wanted to own a full auto?
That's correct.
All right, and how can you recall in your time as sheriff how many of those you might have signed? Was it dozens or hundreds or what?
No, I would say not that. Probably between 10 and 20 I signed. And I signed them because nobody else would sign them. And I signed them only because I believe that my personal opinion didn't override the federal law. Past that point, I didn't weigh in one way or the other in terms of that purchase.
And then we have to wonder if he bought it illegally. I mean, Las Vegas is not that far from the border. And across the border, full automatic weapons are common. Not legal, but common.
Yeah, and that's the problem here. So, you know, we really start to argue over the edges of this kind of tragedy in this country. And in the end, really, it won't matter whether or not the weapon was automatic or not. The fact is that evil always finds a way. And in this case, this was a well-planned, if not sanely planned, situation by this individual. And you wonder what it is when we know what happened, what we really can do to prevent it in the future. And law enforcement's responsibility is unfortunately, to be able to triage a situation and respond like Las Vegas PD did in this situation. I think that given the situation, they did the best that any I could imagine anybody do with closing down a situation in less than an hour from the first shot, start to finish.
Well, for example, Bernie, let me ask you about this. I get into these arguments from time to time with people saying, well, a full auto, that's the dangerous thing. Your department had some semi-automatic rifles, right?
That's correct.
All right. If this man had sat in his hotel room with a stack of magazines and emptied a semi-automatic rifle, is the difference between the amount of time it takes to fire, say, 500 rounds, which I think is one of the estimates of what he fired, from a full auto versus a semi-automatic rifle, the difference in time is relatively small, isn't it?
It is, and the amount of carnage will be relatively small. In this kind of situation, given the fact that he is just blazing away at 22,000 people, you don't have to be much of an expert shot to make any of those shots be lethal. I think the other part about that is that every time we get in this discussion, that we lump assault rifles all together as if somehow that a AR-15 is the same as an AK-47 would be the same as a semi-automatic or a full automatic weapon, which, of course, you know, both of those weapons are perfectly capable of being charged as fully automatic if, in fact, they are still left that way mechanically, although illegal to possess them if they are that way. But they, you know, that's what they originally came with in the military style, was the ability to be a fully automatic. But when they went to the civilian piece, that fully automatic feature was removed.
Well, and in fact, with a lot, I understand that in the development is an AR does not stand for automatic rifle. If you hear that from some nitwit reporter tonight, it stands for Armalite, which was the company that developed it. But when they first started putting them in the hands of young soldiers during Vietnam, they, as I understand it, they said, let's take away the full auto feature because we have a tendency to have some young soldiers pick it up and empty the entire magazine. Let's give them a 3-round burst and a single shot fire. And then, of course, a safe position. And we'll give the full autos to some of the sergeants and other people. Not everybody in Vietnam even had a full auto M16, did they?
No, they didn't. And, you know, that's, you know, when you take a look at police firearms and the weaponization that goes on the street every day. When I was at Gresham, we started a long rifle program. We screened who got them carefully amongst police officers, even we did. We just didn't give everybody one. But those weapons were semi-automatic, not fully automatic.
Right, because you want somebody to actually, if it's a law enforcement purpose, you want them to be aiming and not just spray and pray.
Not only that, but it takes a conscious decision to pull that trigger more than one time with some fully automatic. That doesn't have to be the case. And even with the correct intent by a law enforcement person, that those rounds can get out of control. And as we know, Las Vegas is one of the places, Nevada is one of the places that you can actually go and shoot a fully automatic weapon on a range, a civilian can. And maybe you remember a year and a half ago when a kid, a very young child, was given one of those weapons with somebody who didn't understand the recoil.
I remember that.
And over the top, she killed the instructor. So these are the kind of things that we start to lump together. And it's more than it's a sophisticated conversation about fully automatic versus automatic in a technical sense. In terms of carnage, not much.
Bernie, let me ask you this. Within hours of last night's murders of 59 Americans and 500 people plus to the hospital, we had Hillary Clinton and Earl Blumenauer, the congressman, saying we have to have more laws.
Mm-hmm.
Would more laws have stopped or even substantially reduced the risk of something like what happened last night?
No, it won't. And my opinion is that Oregon, Las Vegas is, let me say this again, Nevada is one of the states with the most, probably the most liberal gun laws in terms of the ability to carry open carry and that kind of thing. But even last year, they followed what Oregon has done. Those federal checks now are required between even private parties. And that's one of the pieces of legislation that in Nevada has limited the just outright sale from person to person, minus whatever family exceptions there are. So no matter what we do to try to back it off and make it a different kind of a discussion, it will never be a different kind of discussion until the issues around the purchase of firearms are families who actually deal with the problems within their own families. And I don't believe that this guy had no signs of anything going down the road. I don't believe that I don't think his families are lying. I think that they, families, in my experience with the last one, still often acknowledge there's a problem and try to either minimize in terms of their family behavior or what happens later. And if you really look back, there's going to be something that said this guy's on the way to this. He didn't tip over in 2 days.
No, I would agree with you, although at this point it's tough. Law enforcement says we had nothing on him. He had some citation from years ago that was dealt with, but it had nothing to do with something like this. He had no criminal record. He had apparently no arrest record. He had no mental health record. So it was awfully tough to read him from a distance. Bernie, thanks for your insights today.
Well, thanks, Lord.
Glad to have you on. That's former Multnomah County Sheriff Bernie Giusto. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to have your phone calls and your emails from all over the Northwest. This is the Radio Northwest Network, and our quick poll today, actually our Twitter poll, I hadn't given it to you earlier, but we've had a lot to talk about today. Would more gun laws have stopped the mass murder in Las Vegas? It's a simple question. My answer is no. You're free to answer by just going to the Lars Larson website or answer it at Twitter at Lars Larson Show. Brought to you today by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, gravel, sand, or topsoil. Let the Dan Jones trucks put it where you want it and save your aching back. Now, I love naysayers, so let's go to naysayer Greg. Hey, Greg, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, I mean, obviously, as you know, today's been a pretty crummy day. Tom Petty's passed away. Obviously, this horrible shooting. So, you know, it's been a pretty bad day.
Yeah, it has.
The question I kind of had for you, I guess I got more than one. First of all, isn't it kind of interesting? I watched the news. I've listened to you. I find it odd that no one seems to be calling this gentleman that did the shooting a terrorist. I hear more that he's a lone wolf than he is a terrorist, which I just find kind of interesting.
Well, I can tell you that.
A terrorist.
Do you want to know the answer? The answer is that under Nevada law, he is a terrorist. What he did actually constitutes the elements of the crime in Nevada of terrorism. Apparently, under federal law, it's a bit more of a question mark. And usually I reserve the term terrorist for somebody who is using the act they commit to push some political agenda. Before 9/11, the most common acts of terrorism were carried out by Earth First and other environmental groups. And sometimes they were things that took people's lives or put people at risk. And sometimes they simply did property damage. And of course, the Irish Republican Army back in the day was committing acts of terrorism because their goal was to terrorize people with a political agenda of some kind to get something across. At this point, what would you say was the political agenda of Stephen Paddock?
I don't think anyone knows yet. I mean, I've read articles from the Independent and other people. Like I even read your website. People are kind of, you know, what I found interesting is that we're already seeing both sides of the aisle kind of trying to divide the country, not much more. You know,
well, hold on. I know how the Democrats are trying to divide the country by saying that the way to solve crazy people committing crimes is to pass laws that primarily affect law-abiding people. But
what you're almost saying is more guns, because I listen to your...
Actually, I haven't made the more guns argument in this case because...
Well, let me finish if I could.
Go ahead.
I listened to your coverage during the Spokane shooting.
Which was different. Which was different.
I heard you say that you felt teachers should be armed.
Yes, they should.
I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, let me tell you difference.
I mean, what you didn't talk about in that shooting is, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm sure you've read about it just like I have, didn't the boy that commit the shooting, didn't he get his guns because his father didn't lock up his safe?
Yeah, and you know, there are statutes, actually there are laws now in Oregon that will, local laws in Multnomah County, for example, that will punish people for not properly locking up their guns. So do you know what happened the last time they could actually apply the law? The county lost its guts to actually do it because they had a man who had not locked up his guns well at all. His kid got a hold of the gun. He went to Reynolds High School. He shot the place up. And we all said, well, you wanted this law where you could go punish people for not properly locking up their guns. And they said, oh, we don't want to punish the family. They've suffered too much, or words to that effect.
I personally think they should.
I do, too. If you're going to have the law, you should use it.
I thought it was kind of interesting that you wanted the teacher.
Do you want to know the difference?
Firearms, but
Greg, do you just want to keep flapping your lips, or do you want to know where the difference is? The difference here is that nobody on the ground at that concert could have used a gun to protect themselves from a man who was 400 yards away on the 32nd floor. It wouldn't have worked. On the other hand, if a teacher had had a gun when a student came to school at Freeman High School in Spokane, could that teacher have used a gun to both protect the teacher and protect the other students at the school? The answer is yes, they could. In fact, this past weekend, there was a man who saw a 30-year-old guy on a skateboard who had stopped and put a knife to a motorist's chest or neck. And the motorist got out of his car, pointed a gun at the guy, and said, drop the knife. And it worked. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars.
All of this could have been avoided if we'd followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer?
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Be sure and keep that volume up.
On FM News 101.
It's going to be one of the highest rated shows ever.
KXL.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you on a very sad day in America. 59 people have lost their lives in Las Vegas, Nevada. More than 500 have been wounded and injured after a gunman last night, who it turns out was the son of a notorious bank robber from the 1960s, Bingo Bruce, who actually was on the FBI's most wanted list for a time. But this man, Stephen Paddock, decided to check into a hotel, the Mandalay Bay, last Thursday night. And then last night, during a country music festival, Jason Aldean was on the stage performing when this man decided to break the windows out of his hotel room and begin murdering people by firing randomly into a crowd with what appeared to be a full automatic weapon. I thought I'd talk to one of my favorite Second Amendment experts, Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins, who joins me now, columnist at Breitbart News and the host of Bullets with A.W.R. Hawkins, the podcast, and a political analyst for Armed American Radio. Doc, good to have you back on the program.
Oh, Lars, great to be with you, buddy.
Tell me what your first impression.
Not great to be with you under this. But you know what I'm saying. Good to be with you.
I like having you on because you're very knowledgeable. So what conclusion should we draw with what limited information we have now, just less than 24 hours after this mass murder?
At this point, what I would say is, you know, he passed the background check for 3 guns during the last year. And so what that means is you can take the shouldn't have had a gun scenario off the table. That means the FBI allowed him to purchase a gun. And I've said this a gazillion times. I've written it a gazillion times. I've said it on a podcast, on a radio show. Background checks look backward. If there's no criminal history, a background check doesn't read criminal intent. It reads criminal history. Let's put it that way. And this gentleman had none. The sheriff has said that. The gun store owner said that. Apparently, the FBI would say that because they let him pass the background check. So I think what we're waiting on now is the other shoe to drop, which is the other weapons he had with him. Where did he get those? You know, did he acquire some weapons that maybe, I don't want to even plant seeds, but in my mind, what I'm thinking, did he acquire a couple weapons that maybe weren't legal and he used those? So he legally, and if that's true, my theory is then he showed the impotency of gun control on both sides. First, he complied with it. No problem. They didn't stop him. And then he went the other way, if he did that. But, you know, we just have to wait. They're not releasing information right now.
No, and in fact, early on, the Islamic State claimed credit for the killing, for the killings that this man had committed. But then fairly quickly, I mean, within hours, the FBI said, no sign of it whatsoever. And the girlfriend, his girlfriend, is now missing. Well, not missing. She's overseas somewhere. And the authorities have said she's not involved at all in what went on. So I'm wondering what they know that they're not sharing with us. And there are some rather interesting places you could go with that, too.
See, what I think, you just hit on something. This is all theory for listeners. I don't want you to think that I can point this out verse in line. But I would think if I thought a gentleman bought some guns he wasn't supposed to own because they're illegal, that I wouldn't want to say I thought a gentleman bought some guns he wasn't supposed to own because they're illegal, because I might be closing in on the people who sold him those guns. And that's kind of my theory. I would think that they are already, if he had some guns he wasn't supposed to have, that they're already on the move for the source of those weapons. That's what I think. That to me is the only reason that I can figure out, and I don't know everything, of course, but just from past incidents like this, that's the only reason I can figure out why they've withheld the type of weapon to this point. They've told us he had 19 weapons. He passed a background check for three of them for sure last year. And so he may have passed a background check for some of the others or all of the others. But those are the things we're going to find out.
So how do we find out? Well, I want you to give your take, because I've already given my audience the take of the suggestions that came almost immediately from folks like Hillary Clinton and from Democrats like Blumenthal, the nitwit from Connecticut, you know, the one who lied about his Vietnam history, and yep. Earl Blumenauer, who also came out and said, we have to have a whole bunch of new laws because right. that'll address this situation. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, it won't. You know, background checks are the preferred way for criminals to acquire guns. They have been for I don't know how long. And people don't understand, we've had background checks since 1998. When you hear the left talk, you think there aren't any. Now, I'm not pro background checks, so don't be confused by my language. What I'm saying is, in reality, we do have them, and they don't stop criminals. I mean, they stop criminals, but they don't stop would-be criminals, and they never will. So what you have is, it's another overreach by Democrats, an opportunity to do, as my friend Alan Gottlieb said, they use a pistol, let's pass a law against rifles. And that's what they're doing, and I don't think they'll get any traction, but we'll see.
Well, and in fact, one of the specific suggestions you know is going to come back up is the idea that every sale, every purchase of a firearm or sale should be background checked, including those between, you know, family members and friends and even strangers. And they love bringing that one up. They call it the gun show loophole, without mentioning that in many states, including Nevada, it is illegal to transfer a gun without doing the background check unless it's a family, in-family transfer. And if it's really that big a hazard, maybe we shouldn't exclude it in families. Again, I'm not in favor of it, but I don't think it stops anything. But the, you know, the folks like Blumenauer and Clinton can run around saying, I'm in favor of it, and make right. it sound as though it would make a difference. I don't think it would have made a difference. As you said, the man had already passed three background checks this year.
Yeah. And he passed the background check, so there you are. You know, he's going to keep passing them. He would have kept, is what I mean. But, you know, the other thing is, you had Hillary Clinton come out immediately and say, just think how much worse this could have been if he had a suppressor.
I am so glad you brought that up. By the way,
tell
people the difference between a suppressor. They're in common parlance, people call them silencers. They do not silence the gun. They suppress right. the noise. They make it so that you may be able to shoot a gun without doing as much damage to your ears, but they do not silence the gun. But this man would have been right. no more or less deadly with a silencer than than he was without one. Would he?
Right. Yeah. See, Hillary doesn't understand, and any of your listeners who were in the military, and I wasn't, but I did study it a little bit. Any of your listeners who are in the military understand that man had every advantage. He planned this. He's on the 32nd story. He has people crammed in tightly. They have to go out through a tight area. They have to funnel through gates to get out of there. There's no cover for them. So he's got them. They're sitting ducks in the truest sense. Once he opens fire, It doesn't matter whether there's suppressor on that firearm or not. When he opens fire, he's got every advantage. You can't fight back. You can't shoot back, even if you have a gun. Some officers who were there said they couldn't shoot back because they didn't want to hit an innocent's room. You're just a sitting duck. So this is just Hillary Clinton trying to appease the left and appeal to the left and regain some favor. But to me, it's shameless because we have over 500 dead, over 50 dead, over 500 wounded. That someone would try to make political points out of this is shameless. And Hillary Clinton is showing us how shameless it can be.
Well, and by the way, Doc, I know people will say, but Lars, you're using for political purposes, too. And I said, no, I'm merely saying that there are people out there trying to take away civil rights. Civil rights right. that you and I both enjoy, and I'm objecting to that idea. I'm not trying to gain anything new. I'm trying to right. say, let me have my God-given rights, as the Constitution guarantees. Do not take them away. The people who are trying to say, this is our opportunity to take away people's civil rights, those, I think, are using it for political purposes. Those of us who are saying, can I please have the rights that God gave me that I have right now? That's not politics. That's just saying, let me keep the rights I already have.
Right. Well, and I'll say to any listeners who think we're politicizing, here's my personal rule, but it's also the rule we conduct ourselves with at Breitbart on this topic. As much as I write on these things when they happen, I never write until the left has politicized it. And sometimes it's hard to sit tight because you know they're going to do it. You know they're going to do it. But, you know, a Seattle Times reporter politicized this within an hour of me learning about it last night. And so anything I wrote in reaction, as you're saying. I wrote objecting to their attempt to politicize this and take away my God-given rights. So you're exactly right. My posture is reactive in this, and I try to never be the person that you can point to that politicized something. And I know you're the same way, but I'm saying I have the same mindset that you have.
I want Americans to have their civil rights. We got them from God. They're guaranteed by the Constitution. And one of the biggest fights over the last 30 years has been to hang on to them so that a bunch of liberal nitwits don't take them away. Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins with us. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Gary writes in, I'm a gun enthusiast and an NRA endowment member. When I watched the cell phone video that was recorded of the shooting in Las Vegas last night, it sounded a lot like the rifle was not actually a full auto, but one fitted with what is called a bump fire stock. That's what I was trying to tell a listener who called in a short time ago. If you're not familiar with these, they allow the weapon to use its own recoil to force a very rapid trigger pull. The ATF does not treat these as illegal, and they do not technically make the rifle a machine gun, because by definition, a machine gun fires multiple rounds per trigger pull, and with a bump fire stock, the trigger is actually pulled once per round, just very quickly. Another possibility is what's called a binary trigger. These are legal in most states, not Oregon, and fire one round when the trigger is pulled, and another when the trigger is released. As you can imagine, it makes it fire so quickly that it sounds a lot like a machine gun. To your calls now, let's go to Adam in North Bend. Hey, Adam, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. One of my favorite guys.
Thank you.
Enjoy listening to you. However, I almost feel like I didn't call into the naysayer. I almost feel like I am in this case, just because you know, I know you don't want to politicize this event, and you're avoiding that because I think that's integrity. The thing is, it's kind of like when you have someone named Muhammad Al, whatever, is like out there shoots people. You know, immediately the media is going, we can't imagine what his motive might be, and everyone's going, it's probably Islamic terrorism. You know, in this case, it's not an Islamic name, but he shoots up a Jason Aldean concert with a bunch of conservatives. I'm thinking this is like the guy that shot up people at, shot Steve Scalise. But the media won't talk about that at all. It's only guns. So what is this silence out there? You know, it's very suspicious to me, because it's not that hard to follow up on someone's, you know, social media stuff, who he talks to.
Well, and not only that, let's start with this. Is he registered to vote? And which party is he registered for? And I've already seen there's one meme going out there where somebody found somebody who looks a lot like Stephen Paddock, who was in one of the protests. I'm going to wait until I'm sure on those things. Just like today, CBS jumped a little ahead with the death of Tom Petty, although it does sound as though the great Tom Petty has passed away. They got ahead of the game. And there are times where that's valuable. As far as I'm concerned, this man is dead. We can figure out his motivation, and if we find it out today or tomorrow, it's not going to make a gigantic amount of difference. But I'm with you.
Right.
I want to know more about his background and what might have motivated him to do this.
Well, they're happy to jump ahead. They'll be jumping again like crazy if this was a Barbra Streisand concert that got shot up or something, you know what I mean? Or something like that. If it was a lefty type of event, this was a solid conservative right-wing kind of event. I mean, Jason Aldean is one of Hannity's favorites. They're on the radio all the time.
He's a great performer, and he's a great talent. But
if this had happened on the other foot, I think the media would be all over it. The first thing they'd be saying is, this has got to be a conservative. I mean, look at the people he shot, you know.
Well, by the way, do you know who jumped out in front on that one, and she's now looking for a new job?
Right, I heard you say that.
Yeah, Haley Geftman Gold, the network's now former vice president and senior counsel. I don't know how much you get paid if you're the top lawyer at the CBS network, but I have a feeling it's probably north of seven figures. And she just lost her job because she openly said on Facebook that she had no sympathy for these people who would go to a Jason Aldean concert or a country western concert because they're probably gun-toting Republicans. Now, the fact that the corporate culture at CBS has a relatively young lady, she got married about 10 years ago, who's their senior legal counsel, who's in the management ranks of a top U.S. television network, news network now, social media as well, who openly disparages people who, simply because of their choice of music, she assumes they're all a bunch of Republican thugs.
Right, and they use language like that all the time. And you know, that's why I'm surprised that people aren't bringing up this connection. Like it's the most likely, you know, that this guy just, you know, it's the whole language of the stuff coming out with you know, Black Lives Matter and the Antifa and all of that. I mean, does he have associations? These are dangerous left wing groups, and when they're motivated, you know, by groups like that, it's like, you know, we're talking domestic terrorism type stuff.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Adam, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Let's go to John and Eugene listening on KPNW. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going? I'm listening to you from the United Soviet Socialist Republic of Eugene on the Willamette.
And what's on your mind today?
Oh, God, I don't even know. There's just listening to you while I've been on hold the last however long, I've heard a bunch of good points brought out. One of the things I want to mention is, among other things, background checks. I'm 34. I had a buddy years ago. He was 19 years old. He had a pending, I think it was a speeding ticket of some sort. This is in the state of Oregon.
Yep.
It was pending. His hunting rifle for the season didn't work. His scope broke or something. He went to go buy a new one from a pawn shop just for the season.
Yep.
And he got denied on his background check.
Yep.
So there's tons of reasons that you can get denied on a background check. I'm not, you know, trying to defend anything in and of itself for what this guy did, because it seems he's had a few rifles he's bought lately. But I mean, there are.
It's pretty easy to get denied. By the way, John, I haven't checked back with this guy, but a few years ago we talked to the sheriff of Siskiyou County, former military, former LAPD, elected sheriff of Siskiyou County. In other words, the guy's got a very, very clean record and lots to lean on. They denied him. And they wouldn't even tell him why they denied him. But he went down, he wanted to buy an old Garand rifle that was part of some rifle program in town. And they were surplusing these old Garands. And they're kind of collector's items. And so he went down to buy it.
Are.
And here he is, the sheriff of an entire county. He's the top law enforcement guy for that county. And they said, I'm sorry, sheriff, but we're going to have to deny you because you didn't pass your background check. That's how tight the background checks are.
Oh, yeah. It's in the hands of whatever state police, you know, whatever state you're from, and they go to the federal. And I mean, there's a whole convoluted mess of where things go, where they come back, and one little thing that's not filled out properly, or it's basically up to the whim of whomever you're talking to, you can be denied.
Heck, I picked up a new gun the other day, and my gunsmith said, oh, don't forget to check the Hispanic, non-Hispanic box, or it won't be valid. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to get to your phone calls and emails, but this is one I had not expected to get. Micah is on the line right now. Hey, Micah, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, I had told people just very briefly that there was an incident in which it happened last Thursday, in which a man with a knife was being held at gunpoint by another man because they learned that the knife had been drawn by this man, Michael Van Gelder, who was riding his skateboard when he became involved in a confrontation with a 39-year-old man who was driving in the area. They said Van Gelder had a large fixed-blade knife, and he was pointing it at the driver. And somebody drove up and said, hey, that's wrong, jumped out and pulled a pistol and said, drop the knife. That was you?
Yes, sir.
So tell me how it went down, just in case the Daily Dead Fish rapper got it wrong.
Yeah, the Dead Fish rapper definitely got it wrong. Excuse me. I was sitting at Conversion Brewing, which is where I work at, and we have an outside patio. And as I was sitting there, this Van Gelder come rolling down the road and was screaming obscenities, went up to the gentleman in his vehicle, put his hand on his window and took a 10-inch blade and looked like he was ready to thrust it right into this guy's neck. It was at that point that I jumped over a fence, drew my weapon, and was able to stop him from killing the driver.
What did Van Gelder drop the knife at that point?
He didn't drop the knife, but he turned and tried to run. And then the driver of the vehicle and myself were able to tackle him.
Do you have any idea, based on what he was screaming, what his beef was?
The guy in the vehicle was listening to his music loud, and he thought that the guy was yelling at him. Van Gelder suffers from schizophrenia.
So is he a well-known also, local or something?
Yes, sir. And he's also, you know, known as being, you know, a drug user.
Well, I don't know if we can say that or not. I mean, because does he have a history with the local police that you know of?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you were worried that this guy was going to knife the driver.
Exactly.
Wow.
And, you know, this Van Gelder has already served, he served a year in Lincoln County for aggravated assault.
So when the police arrived, what was the situation at that point?
Well, by the time the police arrived, I was able to have, you know, I was able to have gotten the guy's knife. I threw it off into an alcove to where, you know, he wouldn't be able to reach it if he was able to get out of the, you know, the hold that we had him in. And then when the police arrived, they took him into custody, and they did exactly what they're supposed to do. They took my concealed carry permit, my driver's license. They removed my weapon from my holster because I was able to get my weapon reholstered after I got the knife from them. And, you know, did everything that they're supposed to do with clearing everything. And then once the whole situation was over, they brought me back to the vehicle, handed me back my firearm, and, you know, said, had it not been for you, there, you know, things could have gone much worse today.
So they had a very positive attitude toward you and what you had done.
Yes, sir.
Anything more you want people to understand about? Because I'm glad when I hear about incidents like this, because I tell people that there are firearms incidents like this where a shot is never fired, but a bad guy is stopped and somebody is saved from some kind of potential, you know, damage, you know, either being hurt or being killed. And I tell people this and they say, oh, that doesn't happen that often. I say, well, the FBI says it happens about 1.5 million times a year. And they say it couldn't possibly be. Well, except that. But that this became a news story, most people wouldn't have even known that it happened.
Right. And for me, the best part is that the news came in. Neil Zawicki, who is the reporter for the Democrat Herald, came in, contacted me as soon as he could and said, let's shed light on this and let's let people know that the Second Amendment concealed carry permits are a good thing that saves lives.
And that's a fantastic message to get out there, because I think there are a lot of people who aren't like you. They don't own a firearm. They don't have a permit. And they think, well, yeah, I guess in theory it could stop a crime, but I've never heard about it. Well, you could probably do a dozen stories like this every week in Oregon and another couple of dozen in Washington every week. But you'll very rarely find people like Zawicki who are willing to, go tell the story and show it in a positive light. An awful lot of newsrooms, like it or not, will show anything connected with guns in a negative light.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying, you know, us, you know, yourself, you know, myself, you, other licensed, you know, concealed carry holders want to have this out there so that people understand. We are an asset when something happens. And it's like I say, it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
That's right. Micah, you know, it's funny because a guy called in earlier today and he was kind of beefing me. And he said, well, you know, you brought up the argument about firing back. And I said, not today on this situation. He said, why not? And I said, well, because the Las Vegas situation did not lend itself to concealed carry, you know, action. Because somebody on the ground looking at a hotel 400 yards away and trying to spot where is the gunfire coming from, and you've got a whole hotel that you should know is full of innocent, law-abiding people and one bad guy, the idea of trying to fire back from 400 yards away, even with a rifle, would have been problematic because you're likely to hit somebody else, somebody other than the bad guy. So it doesn't lend itself to that. Just like most of the tools I own at home don't lend themselves to every circumstance. I have a fire extinguisher, but it's not very good for pounding nails. And I have a ladder, and it's really handy, but it wouldn't be very handy for a lot of other things. I mean, different tools for different jobs, right?
Exactly. You know, and you think about what happened in Las Vegas. You know, 400 yards away at 320 feet up. Who's going to be able to do anything with a handgun?
Nobody. Absolute. Not the best. Not the best marksman in America could do anything with a handgun. No, not the police with a handgun from there. A long gun, maybe. But even then, you know, when I was talking to Sheriff Bernie Giusto, the former sheriff, you know, even one of his officers, even a SWAT team sniper. If you'd said to him, do you think you can pick the right hole in that hotel and shoot the bad guy from here? He would tell you, I'm more likely to have, if that bullet drops 6 feet, it's into somebody else's room, and it's going to kill an innocent bystander, and they won't do that. And you know, that's a sensible choice. So,
yeah, and the main thing is, you know, even with situations like what happened on Thursday, situational awareness, you know, is what we need to get out there also.
Well, and imagine how tough it is in this circumstance because, you know, I looked at these videos and I looked at that hotel and I thought, if you were on the ground there, how long would it take? How many bullets would have to hit around you before you could even get a rough estimate of what direction are they coming from? Are they coming from ground level? Are they coming from up above? Where up above? It would be tough to know where to duck because, you know, it's coming from somewhere, but you're not even sure where it's coming from. And if you've ever been in Vegas, if there's a loud noise down there, it echoes through those buildings in a way that makes it very confusing.
Exactly.
Listen, Micah, congratulations. Good for you for saving that motorist from some bad things that could have happened.
Thanks a lot, Lars.
I very much appreciate the call, Micah. Let's go. Hold on for a second, Micah. Will you grab him? Guys, will you grab him? Pick him up, please. Ron's on the line in Tacoma. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening on Talk Radio 570.
Oh, good afternoon, Lars. I just wanted to weigh in on this. I've got a question. Maybe you can enlighten everybody, including myself, with this. I'm just kind of wondering here, you know, much like taxes and gun laws pretty much all come from the Democrat Party. I'm just wondering how many gun laws were broken, how many laws were broken in Nevada when this guy did what he did, and if I'm just curious how many of them were sponsored by the Democrat Party. And then my second question is as a citizen, the Democrats sold me and all of America that binding all citizens with gun laws was going to save everybody.
Yep.
Once again, there's people dead, probably more now than ever before, from what I'm understanding, on any attack. So then why does the Democrat Party coming out pushing another fraud of laws on the American public?
And here's the short answer, because it's he could be guilty of dozens, maybe hundreds of individual violations of the law in what he did. It'll all depend on what he was using. We know at least he committed murder 59 times. We know that he caused a panic that injured 400 people. I'd call that assault on those 400 people, because if you stampede a crowd with whatever action you take, you could shout Allahu Akbar in a crowded place, and if 400 people head for the exit at once, and some of them get trampled, and some of them end up broken or bruised or whatever, I think you've committed assault on all those people. But why do they do it? You know what the real answer is? It's not about guns. It's about control. They want control, and they're uncomfortable with the idea of citizens owning guns. And I appreciate the call. Let me get Linda in before the break. Hey, Linda, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's your question or comment today?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like you to explain to me how you come up with your owning a gun is your God-given right. Is that in the Bible? I didn't hear anything about guns.
No, the founders of this country,
a
course on the Constitution would tell you that the founders of this country believed that our rights come from God. And it's very important that they did, because if my rights came from
they knew that God wanted you to have a gun?
Yeah, they did. You want to know why? Jesus believed in self-defense. Jesus Christ. Do you want an answer?
Hey,
Linda. Linda, did you call for an answer or just to talk?
Sure.
Okay. Jesus believed in the right of self-defense. I've got a whole brief I've written up on over the years. He believed you every the most basic.
An eye for an eye?
No, that's the Old Testament.
Do you remember an eye for an eye? He said
that's the Old Testament, Linda.
My room is turn the other cheek.
Linda, that's the Old Testament.
Yes.
The most basic.
Okay. Where did he say?
Okay, can I answer your question, or are you just going to keep talking?
Yeah, go ahead.
The most basic human right anyone can have is the right to preserve your own life. And second to that is your right to protect the lives of the people around you, whether they're your friends or family. You have a right to protect your own life. You have a right to protect the lives of those around you. And other people do not have a right to unlawfully take your life. So self-defense is probably the most basic human right. Before you get to free speech or Second Amendment or anything else, you have a right to protect your life. If you're up against a man with a gun, the only way you're likely to be able to stop him is by having a gun to stop him from taking your life. And the founders of this country believe that our rights came from God, because if they didn't, if they came from a government bureaucracy, then the same government bureaucracy that gave them can take them away. But if they come from God, they are unalienable, as they said in the document, unalienable rights to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. So how do I have the right to life if another citizen can just take my life for whatever reason he likes? You have to be able to protect yourself. The founders believed that, and they didn't think rights came from a government bureaucracy. They knew they came from God. And I appreciate your question. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and your emails. Let's go to Andrea. Andrea, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening on KQEN. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. This is kind of an involved conversation, so hopefully I won't run into a time crunch. But I wanted to bring up the fact that the man who did the shooting, his father was on the FBI's most wanted list for robbing banks.
Yeah, he was a bank guy. That was Bingo Billy, I think his name was, or something along those
right,
lines. Yeah.
Right. And what no one seems to be talking about in the whole gun control debate is adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, actually change the way the brain develops when it happens in your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to note, first of all, that his father, you know, was a bank robber. And I'm guessing that if his father was a bank robber, that there was probably a lot of instability in his home.
I'm guessing.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Probably.
But, the point that I'm making is that, you know, it's not, first of all, I'm a huge constitutionalist. I believe fully and completely in every word that the Constitution says. So this whole thing about, you know, take the guns away from people, that's not what I'm about. What I am about is I'm about addressing mental health and core issues, because I think that it is something that has been neglected hugely.
Okay, because we're going to run out of time soon, how do you propose to address it?
Well, I will let you know that here in Douglas County, I am part of a faith-based ministry that has actually been helping men and women when they come out of jail, go through a counseling process that includes one-on-one mentorship, 16 to 18 hours a day. But the biggest issue is that we address their childhood experiences, and we address the ways that their brains have developed adversely. And we have been able to see changes, even definable changes using MRIs and brain imagery. We've been able to see changes in how their brain works.
Now, hold on. So you're telling me, now, look, man, we're up against the clock. But what I find hard to believe is, if your brain really does develop differently when you're up in that kind of environment as a child, your brain, and then you're managing to change it back just by talking to them, that's a little tough. You got the Lars Larson Show.